In 21st century America, it seems that every new day brings new challenges when it comes to raising our teenagers. And with those challenges come new complications. We talk often on Licensed to Parent about how the digital age has given our kids access to a plethora of new information and ideas that were unavailable to teenagers or even their parents in previous generations. But what about the flip side of that coin? While they've gained access to the world and its influences, many teens today seem to have lost the access that earlier generations may have had to their parents. We'll be talking about that today on Licensed to Parent. Well, hello and welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta. Our host is the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry. I'm Rich Rozzle, and Trace, you know, I don't think you'll get much pushback from anyone by saying that these are definitely challenging times to be a parent of a teenager. And especially, I guess, to be a Christian parent of a teenager.
Yeah. Well, listen, my daughter is a blessing. She's the one remaining child in the home. I'm glad that, you know, we're about done with our parenting journey, Rich.
I hear you're never really done.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, my daughter has just started her senior year in high school. And I'm telling you, the school pressures and weird counterintuitive social demands that those people in her school are just overwhelming, and I think more than any teenager should ever have to endure. I think she'll be glad when school is all over.
You homeschool Alexa, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Beth and I are the people in their school with the weird counterintuitive social demands. So
I got a feeling the parent-teacher conferences at Alexa's school must be rather interesting to watch. Well, Trace, I hope that today's guest can educate us at a higher level.
Yes.
Fortunately, he has connections with a major university, so there is hope.
Well, there you go.
Our guest today is Jim Burns. Jim is president of Homeward, and he is executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. Jim speaks to thousands of people around the world each year. He has a daily radio broadcast that is heard on over 800 stations and via podcast at homeward.com. He has books in print in 25 different languages now. Those titles include Faith Conversations for Families and a book that we refer to here at Shepherd's Hill every now and then, Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers. Jim and his wife have three daughters. They live in Southern California, and we are delighted to have him back with us.
Well, Jim, welcome back to the Licensed to Parent broadcast. Thank you for being on.
Hey, great to be with you, and good listening to you guys as you were talking about the teens, Trace. I'm not sure you ever give up on the parenting. You know, teen years,
right.
And then you have to do the raising an adult child and
that's right.
As a parent, and I haven't figured that one out. So,
but I am very glad you said that, though, Jim, because I think as parents, we often forget that what we're doing is raising future adults.
Right.
We're not raising kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's our phrase at Homeward. We say, and with our Understanding Your Teen seminar, the goal isn't to raise necessarily obedient kids, but to raise responsible adults who love God.
There you go.
And that's a big deal when it comes to trying to help teenagers. It's a major issue for parents because it helps them at least kind of look at how to do it in terms of what the goal is. Sometimes
absolutely.
We just try to, you know, parent through Thursday and then Friday and then Saturday. Oh, we got another week.
Yeah, and you can't hardly blame some of those parents for doing that, too. But, Jim, a lot has happened in our country since we last talked, and I know that developing healthy families is part of your mission at Homeward. What, if anything, has the recent Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage done to affect your work out there in California?
Actually, for what we do, we try to teach healthy sexuality, and we know that the more positive, value-centered sex education that kids receive from the home, mm-hmm. the less promiscuous they'll be.
Right.
So, you know, our focus is saying, you know what, instead of just worrying about all the stuff that's going on, you know, in Washington with that, and I think people need to be concerned about it, our focus is saying this is giving us an opportunity to speak in more churches. Homeward's the largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S. We've seen an uptake in churches saying, we need to come and equip our parents
absolutely.
To talk about healthy sexuality because they didn't have their parents do it.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is this new generation of young people are being raised in a society where they just assume certain things are right when in fact they don't have that biblical worldview. So what we're trying to do is help parents establish the biblical worldview within the home
right.
so that the kids have a shot at it. You know, a lot of kids, you know, they don't know that, you know, our government isn't the moral and biblical mandate.
Right.
And yet, you know, we need to respect our government at the same time. Yeah. I see it as an opportunity for us as Christians to talk about healthy sexuality, period.
I see your point, but I do believe that this thing is more political than anyone realizes, and that the political part of it is going to affect our kids. Like, for example, you know, I got a 6-year-old at a restaurant, and two guys are in the booth necking, you know, next to me. You know, I have to explain that to my 6-year-old, and I
sure.
Just,
oh no, I buy that, and the truth is that we were never their age. I mean, you know, we were 6 and 8. 11 and 13, but we didn't have to see what our children and youth see in that, you know, necking in the, you know, in that restaurant.
The TV shows.
We didn't see that kind of stuff.
Right, the normalization, you know, the TV shows and things like that. And when those kids are getting, you know, see this stuff, it's making brain connection. It's wiring their brains up to think that, well, you know, this is okay. And so when parents come in to try to argue their point, you know, later on, or maybe right then, you know, Junior's not catching on too well. But we here at Shepherd's Hill, we're already getting more calls and have taken more kids who claim to be struggling with LGBT issues. Meanwhile, some mental health associations, particularly some of the most powerful ones like the APA, have taken positions on LGBT issues that appear to have no way of determining whether a teen truly is struggling with these issues or whether some of these kids are simply emotionally unstable or perhaps, you know, feeling disenfranchised by the mainstream to the point of thinking that they can at least find some acceptance in the LGBT community. So what counsel do you have for parents who that would help them better determine whether their teen truly is struggling with these issues, or maybe they're just simply victims of a culturally induced meme that, you know, just to be accepted or even hip or trendy?
Well, I think it's one of the issues of the day.
Yeah.
What we do know is that 10% of kids sometime between the ages of pretty young, like, you know, you're talking in the early teen years to 25, which, you know, the brain quits growing at about 24, so, you know, they're still developing, will experience gender identity confusion. And what happens is, if kids are vulnerable, they may move into a lesbian or a homosexual lifestyle, not because they're really homosexual or lesbian, but it's because they have this gender confusion. So to me, one of the best things to do is go back to teaching healthy sexuality in terms of, you know, God created men, God created women, etc.
Right.
Get them feeling good about, you know, their own gender issues. I was talking with a young woman recently in Chicago, actually, who, you know, she said, this year I've kissed a boy and I've kissed a girl. And I said, well, you know, how was that? And she said, well, it was.
You're not
going to
quote that song, are you?
Katy Perry, of course.
Yeah.
But the interesting side to it was she heard me speak on God's view of sexuality. She came to me later and she goes, you know what? I've never heard this.
You
know,
there you go.
I'm not a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be, you know, a woman. Well, I'm not saying that in one talk that was the magical issue. I'm just saying, by us bringing up healthy sexuality, a lot of these kids don't know that.
Well, let me give you proof of what you're saying. Without using any kind of reparative therapy, no coercion, no shame, no guilt or threats of hellfire or any other carnival tricks that are often used, we've seen a number of kids forsake the gay lifestyle over the years. In fact, just 4 teens in the last 2 months denounced any future homosexual pursuits. My sister lived a lesbian lifestyle for 20 years, half-sister. Her dad was just not there. Got a great Christian husband today, a wonderful little kid. Why then do so many mental health professionals take the position that parents should be accepting their children's, quote, God-given proclivities in this area? Because once we expose these kids to the history, the science, the statistics, the facts, the logic, the context, wise alternatives, scripture, and politics, we understand this is there's a political element to all this stuff. Basically, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story, we see these kids turn around because it becomes their idea.
Well, part of it is because we haven't ever had these kind of good conversations, and some of the kids obviously have this because there's been sexual abuse in their life, or some kind of, a, you know, 65% they say of people who move into that kind of lifestyle had some kind of sexual abuse in it.
Sure.
Well, you know, so that's not really the issue is you've got to sometimes go deeper and deal with it. But I think a lot of them, it's like what you're saying, you don't even need some of the reparative therapy. You simply, and I'm not saying this for everybody, but I'm saying that for the vast majority, I honestly believe that if they had healthy role models, if they had healthy, a healthy view of it. And it's not just a one education side, but, you know, if there was something healthy. That's why I love that kids go to church. I love that they're in youth ministry or children's ministry because, you know, there's going to be some role models there. No one's perfect, but there's going to be some role models where they go, gosh, I want to be like. I mean, I didn't have any of this issue growing up. I surely liked girls. But, you know, my youth pastor, when I became a Christian, I became a Christian at 16, not raised in a Christian home. But I wanted to be like my youth pastor. Well, you know, it was just a normal thing because that's, you know, who was influencing me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, these kids need to be around, you know, good, positive role models.
Real quick, Trace used an example a moment ago about being in a restaurant with a six-year-old and having two guys in the next booth necking or whatever. I think the problem goes deeper than just the fact that of what we're seeing a lot of right now, which is talk about homosexuality in culture. But there is the issue of manners, of proper place for things. A heterosexual couple shouldn't be in the next booth necking. And I think...
and you can tell we're old because we're using the word necking.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Well,
you're exactly right.
I figured that was something that doesn't yet have another meaning. I'm sorry. I've talked to my teenagers enough and they go, Dad, that doesn't mean what you thought it meant. But
seriously.
Public displays of affection, if you will. Holding hands is one thing, but when you are passionately kissing out in public, that's an entirely different matter. And that, to me, is part of a healthy sex education, is teaching our kids that's a private thing.
Yeah, I didn't mean to open up a can of worms here either. I didn't mean they were passionately kissing. I mean, just... friendly, public,
public friendliness is heavily frowned upon here.
Sitting in the same side of the booth, you know, kind of, you know, just snuggling up and things. That's what I was referring to. But anyway,
sure. Well, the illustration is, you know, if the some kids might not notice it, but if they did, then you say, well, you know what, in our family, here's what we think about that, and you don't even have to go all the way to dealing with, you know, the heavy duty details, but just simply say, we love affection, and affection is done. You know, in this place. And so now you're teaching them healthy things. So we found that the most effective way for us to teach our own kids, you know, have those spontaneous conversations and look for those, almost
teachable
pray
moments.
For those. And it might be a television show. It might be at the restaurant. It might be in the car driving. It might be a song. But those are the times when you begin to create dialogue where they're safe.
Yeah.
Because a lot of kids would never want to talk to their parents about sex because parents either didn't say anything or they totally freaked them out at the kitchen table when they, you know, drew stick figures and diagrams that were scary.
It was a one crescendoed big-time event. This should be a continual conversation that goes on. And like you say, if you're watching TV or you run into a situation out in public, I mean, this needs to be a continual conversation that we have with our kids. Unfortunately, we do have to have it earlier today than I think any other time in American history. And then they don't get uncomfortable. When those brain connections are being made, they're being made in a right way. When they see something that is bizarre according to your family standards, then they'll know it. But I know
they're going to see pornography at age 11. So
sooner. We're getting calls
right now.
Yeah, we're getting calls for 6-year-olds with pornography addictions.
No doubt.
This is craziness.
No doubt. But you know, if what I've seen lately says, you know, that there are no, you know, the death of innocence has happened. There are no kids who haven't really seen pornography. The average age, you know, is 11. It could be much earlier with some, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the case, then of course we have to have healthy conversations about sexuality earlier, because I want my kids and I want, you know, any of our kids to have conversations from mom and dad with the values rather than from either pornography or you know, what, you know, Justin Bieber is saying about
absolutely,
or, you know, whoever the latest greatest, you know, rock star is.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting those people down. Those people are hurting 25-year-olds who, you know, they needed healthy sexuality.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the point being that what we've got to do as parents is buck it up, have the courage. But parents wait too long.
Right.
And then their kids have had these experiences. And Trace, you were talking about, you know, the brain connections. Well, now their brain has taken a photo of, you know, things online.
Yep.
That, you know, the first time I saw a woman who was topless, it was in a magazine called National Geographic.
Yeah.
I was 8th grade.
Yeah.
I'm 61 years old. I still have the picture in my head. My heavens.
Yep.
So, and it's not a pretty picture, by the way. It was a woman on the Amazon. It was not a pretty picture. But the point being that today kids have those pictures, if you would, in their head and their brains doing all kinds of interesting stuff with it. So now they're looking at the opposite sex, both young men and young women, as sex objects.
Yeah.
And so we, as parents, we can complain about it, or we've got to do something about it. and have dialogue with them.
Yeah, we absolutely
do. And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, I write books on this subject. And when it was time with our daughters, they're now in their 20s, but when it was time with our daughters, it was awkward.
Yes.
It was uncomfortable. Had to talk about words that I wasn't happy about having to talk with my kids about. But again, if they have it from, you know, their parents, it's going to affect them in a positive way. So it says both liberal and conservative, interesting enough, Christian and non-Christian, they all agree on this, that the, you know, back to what I said, the more positive, healthy sex education kids receive from home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you start early, and obviously you don't give a 3 to 5 year old every detail, but you go, you know, there's certain things you'd say to a 3 to 5 year old, a 6 to 9 year old in terms of development. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 to 14 is a huge age for, you know, kind of the purity issues and things like that. And then at 14, you pretty much talk about anything and everything.
Yeah. Which is why the conversation needs to be an ongoing conversation, because it's going to evolve or devolve, how you look at it. But I think one of the differences is, you know, when you and I were growing up, the things that we were exposed to, you know, it wasn't in living color, in motion picture. It was usually a hetero type of thing. And today, the incredible perversions that are out there, and these are the things that are branded in our kids' heads. And so when we start looking at some of these kids and dealing with them, we have to keep in mind that they are wired for some of this stuff early on. And I think we don't take into consideration that, you know what? Homosexual pornography is something that these kids have been exposed to as well, that are leading them in this direction. I want to get back to that after the break, though.
Yeah, we do have to take a quick break. On behalf of our stations, you're listening to Licensed to Parent. You'll find us online at licensedtoparent.org. Our guest today is Jim Burns, president of Homeward. You'll find him and his work online at homeward.com. That's homeword, W-O-R-D.com. Back with more conversation right after this.
Everywhere we go, we're surrounded by screens. Have we entered into a techno-utopia?
Or a virtual prison? Prison.
Is our social experience richer and deeper, or more shallow
and artificial?
Discover insightful answers to these questions in the documentary DVD, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. You'll learn from media experts, church leaders, and inspiring individuals and families from across the country, including Trace Embry and students from Shepherd's Hill Academy. Most importantly, you'll discover how God's Word addresses the unique media challenges we face today. Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture, available in the store at licensedtoparent.org. Proceeds benefit the Shepherd's Hill Academy Scholarship Fund.
This is Ken Ham, President and CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum, and I just want to say how much I appreciate Licensed to Parent broadcast. I am so thrilled to know that there are those out there who are standing on the authority of God's Word in this age of compromise, but teaching parents how to build their thinking on the Word of God and to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation. So often we see that spiritual legacy being lost, and we need more people listening to broadcasts like Licensed to Parent so that they will know how to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit licensedtoparent.org.
Welcome back to Licensed to Parent. You'll find us online at licensedtoparent.org. I'm Rich Rosl. Our host is Trace Embry, and our guest today is the president of Homeward. You'll find them at homeward.com. His name is Jim Burns.
Well, Jim, I know your book, Teenology, touches on our culture's power to influence our kids. Our tagline here at Licensed to Parent is insight for today's culture. So I think we both understand how culture is affecting the thought process of so many American teens today. But how is our culture also negatively influencing the thought process of the average American parent?
Well, for one thing, parents have to make sure that they are students of the culture, and that's why I appreciate so much what you're doing, Trace, and what others are doing in terms of helping parents understand culture. So,
sure.
First of all, they've got to understand culture. Sometimes they don't put enough energy into it, and mm-hmm. Nobody really wants to totally look inside of it because it can be pretty scary.
And you got to swim against the stream.
Sure. But culture does, affect us. I mean, in the sense of the kind of things we've been talking about, whether it be sexuality or whether it be other issues of the culture, some parents have compromised their values, just slowly drifted, if you would.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying we have to be these hard, horrible, rigid people. That's not going to help. I mean, rigid parenting causes kids to rebel, just like lenient parenting causes kids to not have a rudder. So, but I am saying that we have to be careful that the drift doesn't happen in our own life. We were having a conversation with our daughter, who's wonderful. She's 26 years old. Kathy and I yesterday were in San Francisco, where she lives. And we're talking about some of the culture that she sees every day up there in San Francisco. We had to have a conversation saying, because there were a couple things I was going, well, that's not the world's biggest deal. And then I thought, well, it kind of is.
Yeah.
So I needed to come back to her and dialogue, because she's been raised in a Christian home.
Yeah.
She's actually a strong Christian, but she's going to look at some values and cultural things differently than we are. I'm sure I did that with my parents too. But the fact is that I still need to be able to come back and say, well, biblically speaking, I would look at this from a biblical standpoint, and whether it's politically correct or not, here's what I think. And you know what Heidi said, very interesting, and again, Heidi's a pretty sharp kid, but she said, Dad, I appreciate you bringing that up. She goes, my friends don't think that way, but, that's a good point. That's got me, thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think parents have to do that.
They
and
do.
I think we have a generation of kids who, as long as we don't do it in some, rigid, horrible way, I think they're looking for boundaries. They want to know.
You say that all the time.
What the Bible has to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
What this generation of kids, oftentimes say, you're too this and you're too that, and frankly, a lot of us, when we look at the church, we can be accepting of them. We just don't have to be accepting of the values of the culture.
I think what happens is
doing it in a negative way.
We should be firm on principle, but flexible on method. That's my...
Yeah, I love that phrase. Yeah, that's good.
Jim, something you mentioned at the beginning, and actually the way we opened the program, we were talking about the thought of, at least in the case of sexuality, those conversations need to happen early and happen often. And we need to be doing that across the board as parents, making ourselves available to our kids, engaging with our kids conversationally about everything so that... in the case with your daughter, Heidi, when she's a grown woman off on her own, she is still willing, able, and interested to come back to you, the parent, and have the conversations.
Yeah.
But that does have to start and continue. And I think one of the problems that we face as parents is finding the margin in our lives to be able to do that.
Yeah.
When mom and dad are both so busy with careers and with everything else, and they may all be good things, sometimes, by default, we block out our kids from even having access to us. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think you're right. I actually have a good friend who lives out your way who wrote me a note when we both graduated in graduate school from Princeton, and I didn't go to the graduation. I was coming back to work with teenagers. And he wrote me a note, and he said, Dear Jim, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy.
Yeah, right.
We missed you at graduation. Well, that was prophetic for me so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the fascinating side to it is I think this generation of parents who are so overcommitted, they sometimes become underconnected to their kids.
Right.
I'm not saying we can all, move to Wyoming and live in a commune. I'm saying we have to figure out where we live, how to do this. But I think that's one of the major issues of the day for us to figure out how to, put margin back into our life, because we now know that one of the bigger problems in America is this breathless pace in which we live our life.
Right. Right.
That's a problem. And what happens is, when we're not connected with our kids tend to go into some of those at-risk behaviors that you guys deal with every single day.
Yeah, security issues.
The only answer is that the parents are too busy. But I am saying that, at-risk behaviors often are caused because of the parents being overcommitted. And a lot of Christian parents are overcommitted.
No
Maybe,
doubt.
They're overcommitted even doing good things. I mean,
yeah.
I think today's generation of parents, they want their kids to be involved in so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all good things.
Yeah.
It's just too much.
Well, and that's a related point right there, is sometimes the parents are overcommitted themselves, but sometimes they allow or even encourage their kids to get overcommitted. You got to kind of say, all right, what's your one activity going to be this semester?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard to do. There's a discipline to that. But, our kids never wanted to say, I need a rest. Now, they did sometimes, freaking out or whatever it was. But, you know, parents have to take the lead. Be the parent, for goodness sakes, and do that. Hey, we're excited. We can do one activity for this season of life, and do you want it to be soccer, or do you want it to be band, or, you know, what do you want to do? And encourage them. But if they're so overcommitted, if the kids are overcommitted, it means that the parents are probably giving them too much. And again, then we don't even have time to have some of those kinds of either spiritual conversations or connection points.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I mean, this is not something that we can be prescriptive over the microphone here and tell you exactly what your family needs. We can kind of point you in the direction. You'll have to figure that out. You know your family dynamics.
Jim, we are out of time today, unfortunately. Before we go, two questions that are tied together, I think. You've used the word assessment a number of times in our conversation today. Is there any way that we as parents can assess, take stock of how we're doing along the way to know that we are on the right track? And I guess related to that, whether there is or not, what would you leave our parents with today as, you know, if you do nothing else, your next step during the course of this year should be to do this?
Well, I would say assessment is simply getting counsel. You know, the Bible says where there's no counsel, the people fall, and the multitude of counselors, there is safety.
Right.
I know that for Kathy and I, not only, you know, having professionals help us think through some of this, but also, you know, we were in a small group at our church of couples, and we sort of raised our kids together, and, you know, we learned a lot from them, and we kind of assessed how each other were doing. Nobody feels like they're the perfect parent. I wrote a book called Confident Parenting, which is totally an oxymoron, how to be a confident parent in today's world. But, you know, so I think, you know, you get an assessment. Then, you know, secondly, I mean, I would say to parents, I think most parents are doing a really good job, but I would say don't parent alone and have the courage and the boldness to be students of the culture and have the good conversations with kids about the tough issues that we've talked about today. And nobody says it's going to be easy, but in the end, again, what are you doing? You're raising responsible adults.
There you go. There you go.
Excellent. Our guest today has been Jim Burns, president of Homeward and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. The book that we mentioned a few times today is Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers, though he has many others. You can learn more online at homeward.com. And again, that's homeward, W-O-R-D.com. And you'll find us online as well at licensedtoparent.org. There you can hear archives of past programs. You can discover our parenting blog entitled Insight for Today's Culture. And you can learn more about our parent ministry, Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. Also, while you're there, would you consider becoming one of our ministry partners? Your financial support in any amount helps further the work that we do with troubled teens and helps the outreach of Licensed to Parent to moms and dads working hard to keep their kids from becoming troubled teens. Your donations are all tax-free when you click on the donate button at the top of the page at licensedtoparent.org. Again, that's licensedtoparent.org. On behalf of Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosel. Thanks for listening, and please plan to be with us again next week to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.